Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as part of Comic Geek Speak episode 148, which was originally released on June 19th, 2006.
Hey, on the phone we have John Mayo, everyone.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, John, sit tight for this.
Live from Texas, it's the Mayo Report with your host, John Mayo.
You have your very own intro, John.
Cool.
Somebody has a lot of free time now that his wife's pregnant.
That wasn't me. It was Peter did all that.
Oh, well.
Whoever
you could probably say the same thing.
How'd you like that?
Cool.
Did it give you goosebumps?
I loved it.
So we're here to talk about April numbers.
Yes, we are.
All right.
Okay. This was a confusing month, to be honest. For starters, all these numbers come originally from Diamond. They get massaged and manipulated a little by both Comic Buyer's Guide and ICV2. To turn them into an actual copy of numbers, or number of copies, I should say. Geez, see, I'm already confused. And then I've got charts up on my website at www.comicbookpage.net.
Hey, did we authorize that plug? No, oh, I'm sorry, just kidding.
I hope so. You
did he pay for that plug?
Well, I figure for some of this, I mean, me reading off numbers gets a little, you know, boring and stuff, and actually see the charts sometimes help, and particularly for this month. So, market share-wise, yet another great month for Marvel. Marvel did just under half in terms of both units and dollars. They did about 46.94% in terms of units and about 46.11% in terms of dollars. So, once again, Marvel's just doing gangbusters. And, of course, no surprise, DC came in second. DC did... a bit over a third in units and dollars, 38.84% in terms of units and 39.17% in terms of dollars. And then from there, things drop off a bit. Dark Horse came in third with around 3% both in units and dollars, and Image a little under 3%. They did about 2.47% in terms of units and 2.85% in terms of dollars. So, of course, you know, we're seeing the usual, the two big guys, and then everyone else, you know, pretty far behind, which is unfortunate.
And I guess we should clarify that this is based on the top 300 selling comics.
Yes, excellent point. It doesn't include everything, just the top 300. And this is what's sold to retailers, not what actually sells to readers.
Right, and you have here, in those top 300, DC... had 100 items, whether they're new or reordered. Marvel had 85 items, and Dark Horse had 13. Image had 22, IDW had 13, and then all the rest of the companies drop off into single digits.
Right, right. With Archie having about 9, so it's almost double digits, but still thinking,
right.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing, actually, is you mentioned you know, DC had 100 items. That's a third of the top 300 comics, obviously. What was really unusual was 24 of those were reorder items. And typically there's, you know, a few reorders here and there, but usually not that much reorder activity. So that made my number crunching a little more, I don't want to say difficult, but interesting this time around.
Was that mostly 1 year later stuff?
Almost entirely, yeah. Let's go ahead and dive into DC. Obviously, the top-selling comic this month, as it has been every month it's been around, has been Infinite Crisis. It did, let's see, about 194,400 copies, which is down about 10,700 copies, or about 5.22%. All the other issues had strong reorder activity from, you know, 1,700 copies to 3,300 copies. And this is one of the few series that, you know, every month it's been out, all the other issues have been on the charts with reorders. So it's been doing just incredibly strong, which, of course, is really good for DC. What's kind of interesting, though, is the various Infinite Crisis specials tend to sell, you know, a fraction of what Infinite Crisis does. You know, OMAC Project Infinite Crisis Special sold about 79,400 copies, and the Villains United Infinite Crisis Special sold about 73,800 copies, which are still fairly good sales, but I have to wonder if they had folded it into the Infinite Crisis series itself, made it, you know, 12-issue series or whatever, if they would have had better sales on that.
What were their original prices on those?
The original prices on the specials were $4.99 compared to the $3.99 for Infinite Crisis itself. Hmm. So presumably that did factor in.
You think it wouldn't matter if it was only a dollar difference, you know, you think, but I guess most retailers, you know, they again, well, you know, you're dealing with those double covers.
You're dealing with the double covers, and you're dealing with a couple of things such as retailer cash flow.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Even if they thought they could sell more, they may not have been able to feel comfortable spending the more, you know, and risk having those sit on the shelf.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why one of the reasons you see the reorders for DC doing so well, because retailers are shying away from ordering them heavy at first, and this comes from personal experience at the store, and then are counting on DC having the reorders for them.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. I would not want to be a retailer right now. It's just too hard to guess how things are going to do, and could be very expensive if you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Either if you're too low or too high.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, not to jump ahead, but next month with Infinite Crisis 7 and... Or would it be the next month?
And Civil War.
And
Civil War
the 1 first couple of issues of 52.
Oh, wow. Ooh, that's going to be a mess.
That's actually what I was thinking. Who was top dog between Civil War and Infinite Crisis?
Projections are Civil War 1 was like 300,000 copies.
That's awesome.
Really? That's incredible. That's great.
Rumored projections.
Woo! And Ryan Deemer and 300,000 comics.
And I know for Marvel, that's been available. So for a Marvel book to stay available like that, they had to have done, because I know at Golden Eagle they've reordered at least three times each week. They keep reordering it because they keep blowing through the ones that they get in. So for that Marvel, because Marvel still has that that policy about not overprinting books, they definitely printed a whole lot the first time.
Do they still have that policy? Because there was some reorder activity this month with Marvel on the New Avengers Illuminati special, Amazing Spider-Man 529. And Fantastic Four 536.
I think they do. I mean, you're the one who I would think would know. But
I mean, I assume they do. But what I'm thinking at this point is on a couple of key things, such as the Civil War stuff. They've either relaxed that, or you know, or being very aggressive with their overprinting. And of course, they're probably playing it pretty smart and not really advertising that fact.
No, because you're right, though, because, I mean, again, another book that I saw and they had on here that was a reorder book that is actually still available because they were still getting them is the Illuminati special. I saw it was listed, I can't remember, in the 200s.
It was ranked at 127 and did about 15,000 copies.
Yeah, which, you know, for a reorder, that was just a book that I know when our... The owner of Golden Eagle ordered it. He didn't realize what it was. He thought it was a sketchbook. He didn't realize. I mean, he's a great guy, but sometimes he just doesn't read far enough into it. So he saw Illuminati special, thought it was just a sketchbook starting into the Civil War. So he didn't order that heavy, but he has ordered it every week since. I mean, we've been getting it in, and it goes out the door as soon as we get it in.
Well,
so, you know, you're right. They probably did relax it a little bit and just overprint it, I would think.
Well, and 15,000 copies is not bad sales even for a new book. But for a Marvel reorder to be doing that is just incredible.
Yeah, and then that was a $3.99 book?
Hang on a sec. Let me check.
Yes, $3.99.
Okay, $3.99, yeah.
So, yeah, on top of that, it's a dollar more than your normal book.
Yeah. I'm really uncertain how much of a factor cover price, you know, plays into all of this. I'm not seeing any of the things get skewed in terms of, you know, cheaper things being at the top of the list or the bottom of the list or anything of the sort.
I think when it comes to specials, though, that is a major factor. I mean, if you can think you can live without it, at least I know when I look at it, if I think I can live without it or maybe find it somewhere down the road cheaper, if it's a more expensive book, I'm going to hold off, whereas if it's a $2.99 book and I really want it, I'm going to pick it up. Now, that doesn't work for everybody. I know if there are people there, if they want it, they aren't going to care how much they spend for it.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It's something that may push somebody off the fence in either direction. Either it's more expensive and they're not that sold on it, or it's less expensive and therefore they're more willing to give it a chance. Mm-hmm. So I would agree with that. Okay, DC had a couple of first issues that kind of spun out of Infinite Crisis. It had Ion number 1 that came in at rank 21 with 66,500 copies, and Checkmate number 1 that came in at rank 34 with 49,200 copies. Both of which fairly respectable, not setting the world on fire, but not too bad. And we also get the second issue of Blue Beetle, which came in at rank 46 with 43,800 copies. Now that's down 13,200 copies, or about 23.16%, which is a reasonably sharp drop, but I think a lot of that, certainly not all of it, but I think a lot of it is the standard second issue drop.
Which doesn't seem to be that steep, because you normally hear like a 50% cut in first to second issues.
I was thinking it was usually not quite that steep. Usually when you start seeing, you know, a 30 or 40% drop, it usually doesn't level off too quick and it just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got a few titles this month that seem to be heading in that direction, unfortunately. But, you know, the big question is, you know, how is DC doing with the one-year later stuff? And it was really interesting. Almost across the board for the one-year later stuff, we're hitting kind of that second issue drop point where, you know, how many people came in for the first issue and either said, hey, I like it, but I'm going to get the trade, or maybe it wasn't their cup of tea, or, you know, wherever. Nearly all of the one-year later titles went down from the total sales of the previous issue. There are a couple, no, this is including the reorders from this month in those previous issue sales, okay? Even so, these are still some of the highest sales for the various titles going back, in some cases, you know, 100 issues. So even though they may have dropped from the previous issue slightly, or in some cases not so slightly, it still worked out very well for DC. And, of course, a lot of that is the massive reorder activity this month. Now, one of the titles that did not go down but went up came in at rank number 9, and that was Teen Titans 34 at 82,500 copies, which is up 15,300 copies, or about 22.77%. Now, that had multiple covers, didn't it?
Not 50-50, though. It was like retailer, not retailer incentive.
Which was the Titans?
Yeah, what was that, like one in, what, 10, 20?
Yeah, it was something like that. But
okay, it was limited, so it wasn't,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Since I get all my books from DCBS, a lot of these alternate cover things just slide right past me without me even noticing.
Right.
There was also some healthy reorder for the Teen Titans Annual number 1. Came in at about rank 180 with 7,500 copies.
Now, is that, do they specify if that's the first printing or the second printing?
They did not specify.
Because there was a second printing for a lot of these first issues of these one-year later titles. I don't know if this, you know, if some of these reorders are the first printings or second printings. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, I guess it doesn't.
Unless they say otherwise, I assume they're the first printing.
Okay.
At rank 177, Batman 650 had a second printing with reorders of, let's see, 7,900 copies. And that was explicitly a second printing.
Oh, okay.
But it's hard to say because, I mean, Diamond is not notoriously, you know, detail-oriented on those sorts of things. Now, with both Superman and Batman, both of those went down. Superman 651 came in at rank 14 at 73,400 copies. Batman 652 came in at rank 17 with 72,900 copies. Both of those were down a little from the total sales of the previous month, but up if you don't include the reorders from this month, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is in both cases, it's still stronger sales than the respective title had had over the past 100 issues, with pretty much the exception of the Jim Lee run on each title.
Interesting.
So aside from, you know, I don't want to say, you know, a stunt creative team or whatnot, but let's face it, you could put Jim Lee on just about anything and see it shoot through the roof. You know, the sales are down a little this month for Superman and Batman, but they're still the strongest they've been in, you know, like I said, 100 issues, which, you know, proves that this is working out very well for DC.
So even if it takes a couple months for them to get back down to where they were before all this, it's still, like you said, it worked for what it needed to do, and I guess they probably, I would think they'd have to almost project that they know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I would hope they wouldn't have kind of the standard attrition. I mean, certainly I think what they're doing on both the Superman and the Batman books is just great stuff, and I hope it finds an audience and starts picking up in sales. But, you know, if at the end of the year they're back to where they'd been prior to all of this, in my opinion, it was not as successful as it could have and should have been. I wouldn't say it was a failure, but if the best they can hope for is to bump up sales for 6 months to a year, they're going to get into the, okay, we need to have another major event every 6 months to a year. And well, I don't think we really want that as readers.
Well, I think that's a given.
I wish I could say you were wrong on that, but you're probably right.
Well, I mean, well, also...
Let's just say with Batman, I think it's... You're going to see a bump again this month with the new... New Grant Morrison, the new team.
Paul Dini on Detective.
Yeah, Paul Dini on Detective, and you're also going to bump, I guess, because isn't this when Pacheco's taking over on Superman? And so you're going to get another bump now with the creative teams, new creative teams being put on. But, yeah, you're right. After this bump, let it go for, you know, six months or so and see where your numbers are.
Plus, they'll be knee, Marvel will be knee-deep in their crossover, so retailers have to decide where they're going to put their money, and of course they're going to bank on the event. So it's a back-and-forth game.
Well, yes and no, because, I mean, right now we're in the middle of, for April, we had Infinite Crisis, we had the one-year-later stuff, and on the Marvel side, we were getting the ramp-up to Civil War and a lot of the Annihilation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're already going head-to-head with events, and in some cases, you know, each company is almost competing with itself event-wise.
But one thing we do know, because we just did an interview, that come, what, 6 months down the road, they're already ramping up for another big event from DC, so.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. I suspect that, I mean, they have to have something, you know, prepared for 152, you know, ramps down. Mm-hmm. And when the next thing, I mean, as long as it's continued good stories and not stunt event type crap.
Sure.
Then we win as readers.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just, gee, let's, you know, toss Jim Lee on a title for, you know, 6 months, watch it pop up, and he gets off, bam, it goes right back down. Yeah, that's great for the 6 months, but it doesn't really help anyone long term.
Yeah.
Except maybe Jim Lee, of course.
And Jim Lee's bank account.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody was saying out at, was it Philly, I guess, that the new All-Star Batman and Robin has that gatefold pull out page of,
yeah,
like,
number four.
It does.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they were saying, I don't even know who said it, but they were like, oh, I guess Jim Lee wants a new wing on his house or something like that, because he could sell the original art for like thousands of dollars because it's six pages long or something like that.
But, right? And it's the Bat Cave.
Yeah.
So the detail in that.
I thought that was a funny comment.
Well, did you see those pages on the Civil War pages? There was one one splash page was like $9,000 they wanted for the original. It's like,
yowza.
Holy mackerel.
Only if it featured you on there, Brian, would I consider.
Somebody will buy it.
Oh, I know. But that just like blows me away. So Steve McNiven got paid whatever he got paid for the book. And then he's getting, just on issue one, you know, he's probably clearing, well, I know from those prices, he's clearing like more than $20,000.
Wow.
In it, you know, for the original artwork sales. I mean, holy smokes.
Does he have the original art?
Well, you got to figure there are at least two or three copies of the original art, so.
Why would there, I mean, there's only one page of pencils.
Well, there's one page of pencils. Sometimes there's another page of inks if it's done off a photocopy or whatever. And some of it doesn't get split up between the penciler and the inker and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but well, I mean, the pages, I don't know how, but still, he's making a nice chunk of change.
Well, sure,
taking
yeah.
out a commission for the deal or whatever, he's still yeah. cashing
case,
in.
Because worst case scenario, there's only two, three original pages, so still, you know, one page for $9,000, I mean, it's insane, but I could see it going.
But he clears $10,000 on that, and there's Civil War is, what, six issues?
Uh-huh.
Seven.
So he's yeah. getting, you know, figure $70,000 in addition to what he got paid, that's only for 7 months' work.
Sure.
Well,
just like, I mean, Alex Ross does the same yeah. thing whenever he... Now, Mike granted, Turner. I think most of the time he gives it to charity, but still, you think about if he didn't give it to charity, what he'd be making on those pages.
John,
The JLA Avengers pages went for big bucks, too.
Sure.
Some of those, I'm thinking, might have been, you know, 50,000 plus, possibly. I don't recall.
John, you have an interesting note here. You said Fables number 48 actually went up 200 copies. And then it says, damn you, Jamie D. I was able to read the first five issues and was hooked. DCBS has the trades in the DC backlist for 40% off. But I read comics, not trades. So I bought 1 through 46 on eBay and got 47 through 49 locally.
Yeah, I'm kind of hooked on that. And, of course, I blame Jamie entirely on this.
I'll take the blame with a big smile on my face.
I've read the first five. I've got the rest sitting in my stack to read. I'm hoping for a slow week one of these weeks to have some spare time.
It'll just blow by. You'll just start reading and all of a sudden you'll realize you're done.
That's what I thought about the first five issues. It was a quick read. It kept moving along. I was very impressed. It was not what I had originally feared it might have been,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, a mature take on Fables for the sake of being mature. It was just a damn good story, so I'm really looking forward to those.
And they just keep getting better, I will tell you that.
I was just glad I could find them on eBay for a decent price.
Yeah.
I paid a little bit over cover price, but not by much. I think I averaged about $350 an issue.
That's not bad at all.
No, I was very pleased with that.
And actually, I understand why the jump went back up, because Mark Buckingham came back as... artist, and they went back to searching for Bigby Wolf. He had been missing for a while, and they were kind of ramping up to number 50, which is supposed to be some big. The cover says it's a wedding between Snow White and Bigby Wolf, but that's not. They already said that's not going to happen. So I'm kind of interested to see, but this I understand why it went back up in sales.
Hey John, how about one more DC pick, and then we'll move on to Marvel.
Okay, one more DC pick. Anyone in particular you want me to talk about, or just check?
Oh, Manhunter.
Manhunter. Good choice, because that's just gotten a reprieve. Where is that? Hang on a sec.
It's at number 128.
I'm not a pilot. Hang on just a second. Let me. Okay, Manhunter. 128. Yes. Okay, that one sold 14,900 copies. It was down about 1,200 copies, or 7.45% from the previous issue. Obviously, you know, we're starting to get a feel for where the chopping block is at DC. Presumably, it's around that 15,000 copy for a mainstream superhero book. Obviously, you know, other imprints and other things have other rules. Let me pull up a chart on that real quick so I can see how that's been doing historically to see if it's starting to level off or something. I've been reading it. I've been enjoying it. I don't think it's the best thing DC's got out there, but it's good. It started at number one with 25,500 copies and has been kind of... It's funny. It hasn't been doing a downward trend. It's been going down but then bouncing around a bit, presumably as it has crossovers or, you know, tie-ins or whatnot. It went to... The Manhunter 20 would have been the first 1 year later issue, and it did 16,100 copies, which was up from the 13,000 copies that issue 19 did. So it saw a decent bump percentage-wise from 1 year later, but not the kind of, you know, turnaround that we were seeing on titles like Aquaman or some of the other, you know, things that really seemed to benefit from the 1 year later. You know, hopefully with the additional five issues it's getting with its extension, it'll find an audience or whatnot. Gut feeling, I don't know if it's gonna. I don't think it will. I hope it does. But, yeah.
So, Marvel?
So, let's go to Marvel, yeah. Obviously, the top-selling Marvel book was Wolverine Origins number one at 150,300 copies. It came in at rank number two. And it sold about twice what Wolverine 41 sold in the same month. We'll probably see it drop a little next issue, standard second issue drop, but it's still probably going to be well over, you know, 100,000 copies. I was very surprised how well that started. The other one that really blew me away in terms of a strong start for a Marvel title was Moon Knight number one, which came in at rank six. With 103,700 copies. I mean, I know Moon Knight has a very loyal following, and one or two of you guys
Kevin bought 90,000 copies of that. So
that explains it. I was thinking it had to be something along those lines. Because, I mean, Moon Knight's a great character, but not this kind of an A-list, you know, crack 100,000, you know.
But it does have Dave Finch on it.
True, true. And, I mean, it was a good story, good art, not knocking the book at all. I was just very surprised how strong it started.
Yeah, I think that's one that probably, you know, everybody, since Dave Finch has been so successful on New Avengers, and that was the big thing, that he was moving to Moon Knight, so.
Yeah.
Now, New Avengers 18, that's the one that Bendis put the podcasting article in? That's cool, 121,000 copies.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, that's strictly because he mentioned the podcast, I'm sure.
No, I just think it's great that, you know, the that third highest-selling book is going to get, you know, is going to get exposure to podcasting. You know, people, hopefully some new people read that article and are listening to any of the podcasts. That's awesome.
I hope so, because it's, you know, really, I think, galvanizing the fan base, you know, like we just mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, I got onto Fables because you guys had recommended it, and I got hooked. And, you know, if more people can be doing that on more titles through podcasts, through forums, through whatever, I mean, that's great for everybody. You know, it's a win-win all the way around.
There's a lot of Ultimate titles that got a boost. Ultimate X-Men is up? No, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Fantastic Four. What was going on during that month?
Let's see. I've got my notes right here on that. It was... obviously the wrong line.
You know, was that the Ultimate Visions, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
Let's see. On the Ultimate Spider-Man, that's when Ultimate X-Men guest starred.
Oh.
On Ultimate X-Men, it was the start of the Phoenix stuff. On Ultimate Fantastic Four, it was the Secret of the Super Scroll and the whole White House storyline there. I think this was after the Vision stuff.
Okay.
You know, I'm surprised here with the Fantastic Four issue. Was up 1,900 copies, and that's one of those Civil War issues. I'm surprised it's only 1,900 copies. Like, I would have thought that more people would have bought into the whole Civil War banner. But now, John, can you tell me, because that was the second FF Civil War issue, correct? 537, or is that the first one?
This was the one that had Dr. Doom on the cover. So I think it was the second part.
So do you have numbers for how did Fantastic Four last month go up?
I believe that was one of the ones that had reorder activity this month of 3,100 copies.
Okay. So it's really like 1,900 plus whatever went up last month is really the total upage since Civil War started.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is only 1,900 additional people because of the continuation of the Doctor Doom thing.
Agreed.
Okay.
Well, no. The 3,100 is additional reorders for the previous issue that happened this month.
Right, no, I'm talking about the 1,900 on this, on 537.
Right. Let me pull up my numbers from last month and take a look at how Fantastic Four did there to see how much we got it got a bump on the first part of that story.
I guess it's surprising because I would have thought that more people would have been into the crossover stuff. Like let's say that, you know, Civil War number one does well over 200,000, let's say 250 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I expect 250,000 people to try to buy Fantastic Four, but I would have thought, a good 20 to 30,000 people would have checked it out because it was a tie, crossover. So it's kind of...
But I'm sure, you're going to see that they did.
Well, it went up on the previous issue by 14,800 copies.
Okay, then that's pretty good.
I thought being in the 20s was kind of high for Fantastic Four.
Yeah, what were the numbers that month for 436? 536.
536 did that month 57,900 copies.
Okay, plus then another 3,100 copies were ordered this month.
Exactly.
So
it's close to $20,000 issue. I don't know. Okay, then that's about where I would expect it, I guess.
Well, now, does that make a difference to you if it has that crossover, banner on it, Brian?
I bought it. I wasn't reading Fantastic Four or Amazing Spider-Man. I bought them only because of the crossover.
Just because it's the earliest character I can connect with. The only ones I'm really buying right now are the Spider-Man ones. That's the only one I'm curious to see how his part in the whole thing is going to play off. So the other ones, if I get a trade down the line, then I get the trade. If not, then I just kind of listen to our special episodes, and that gets the gist. I don't feel the need to go out.
I picked it up. I think when they talk about Civil War, they talk about all the lead-up issues, but there actually aren't many lead-up issues.
No.
There's only three Amazing Spider-Man, two Fantastic Four, and the Illuminati special. That's it.
Right.
So it was very easy to get into that. The road was not as long as people
still
seem to think.
20,000 copies is still probably going to be less than 10% of the supposed readership of Civil War. So that's, not a lot of people buying them in comparison.
Hmm. Well, this is where, the publishers are almost in a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation. Either they write the story and market it such that, you feel obligated to get all the tie-ins to feel you're getting, the whole story or whatnot. But then they get the backlash of, gee, why do we have to do that? Or they don't do that, and they keep it pretty much self-contained, like they seem to be doing with Civil War, and certainly, by and large, seem to do with Infinite Crisis. But then you don't really see the sales benefit on the tie-ins and the other issues. So I think we're going to find that a lot of the Civil War Young Avengers Runaways or the Civil War X-Men or the other spin-off titles are going to do much, much lower than Civil War itself. So let's see.
What else you got there for Marvel?
The other thing we've got from Marvel is Annihilation. We had number ones for Annihilation Silver Surfer, Annihilation Super Skrull, Annihilation Nova, Annihilation Ronin. And these came in at ranks, between 35 and 51. And sold between, Silver Surfer number one did 49,100 copies, Super Skrull 42,800, Nova 42,500, and Ronin 39,000. In my opinion, these were really low numbers for, even a lead-up to an event. And it makes me really question how well the Annihilation series itself is going to do. I'm enjoying these. I think they're good titles and should probably have, started a bit better. But, it's a rough time right now. again, there's the Infinite Crisis, there's the one-year later stuff, there's Civil War, there's Wolverine Origins. I mean, there's just so many, you know, good comics competing for the consumer dollar these days. Something had to lose out, and this seemed to be it.
Yeah, I personally was never sold on the whole four miniseries to lead into another miniseries. I mean, I'm buying it, you know, stupidly. I'm like the sheep that I am. Also, and I've enjoyed what I've read so far. I've read at least number one of all of them and number two on some of them. But I was never sold on the whole, you know, concept.
I think it's interesting that there's a 10,000 issue differential between Silver Surfer and Ronan. You know, I guess I just assume that people who bought them were just going to buy all four. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people that are picking and choosing. Mm-hmm. And
well, Surfer has the name.
And I wouldn't have picked Silver Surfer. I wouldn't have thought that Silver Surfer would be the number one. I guess I should have known, but he's like the least interesting to me out of all of them.
What,
so.
What would you have gone with number one? What would you
Super Skrull or Nova? Yeah.
I'm actually surprised Super Skrull beat out Nova.
Yeah. I would have gone with Surfer because I know Surfer just has that fan base that no matter who writes him, who draws him, where they put him, they just go and they buy that book.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Silver Surfer carried a series for, what, over 120 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not surprised it came in the first place out of those. I was more surprised how low it came in. I figured there was more Silver Surfer fans out there and that it would have done, at least cracked, you know, 50K. But, you know.
I see the Thing number 6 had almost a 1.5% increase.
Yeah. No, actually, decrease.
Oh, decrease. Oh,
no, I thought it went up.
Yeah, it's not in red.
Hang on, maybe I...
I think it went up by 300.
Number 1...
You are correct. I have my notes wrong. It went up. So it went up, but only by 300 copies. And I think it was really starting to do a turnaround. I think Dan Slott's campaign just simply didn't have enough time to be effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's no way they could have assumed that it was going to go up by the thousands. You know, I mean, they had to give it a little longer.
A little word of mouth.
Yeah. Although, what was I just reading where they said there is a possibility that it might, like, there's a small chance it might do a She-Hulk thing
a
or Runaways.
Two type thing.
Yeah, they're going to release a trade and then see maybe what that does.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can't remember where I read that, though.
Hey, what about Miss Marvel?
Wow, that one, again, second issue, I expected it to drop, but to go down by 27,200 issues to come in at 46,200, I mean, that's a 37% drop, a little over that actually. I do not see that as a good sign whatsoever. I mean, obviously a lot of that's reflecting what the retailers are expecting it to do, but you know, even if the fans are just, you know, head over heels for it, they're not going to be able to find it in a lot of places. I'm going to be surprised if this series lasts for the long haul.
Son of M and X-Men 198 are still out there. And those are both late in those miniseries. They're still break, you know, Son of M 36, X-Men 198 at 32.
Yeah, and I'm actually surprised X-Men 198 came in above Son of M, because I'm thinking Son of M's looking to have more long-term fallout. I mean, it's hard to tell at this point, of course. But the fact that both of those came in above Ms. Marvel... you know, surprised me a little.
So what about anything else you want to, one more thing you want to pick for Marvel so we can jump in some independent stuff?
Actually, there's three and I'll do them real fast. How about that?
Go for it.
Marvel Team-Up number 19 came in at 19,900 copies. That's up 900 copies, but it's still in the danger zone because it's well below the Thing. So if people want to see that title continue, they better support it.
I wonder if they're letting that go just because it's Kirkman. You know, he's doing the whole Marvel Zombies thing. He's you know, he's a writer that Marvel doesn't want to lose. So I'm wondering if they're allowing it to just have some smaller numbers because of that.
I hope so, because his titles, both Invincible and Walking Dead, have shown a tendency to get an audience and to build the audience.
Right.
So it's possible if they give this enough time to find its audience that they could have a long-term hit on their hands. I mean, we'll see. Sable and Fortune number 4 came in at 198 for the rank with 7,000 copies. That's the last issue of that miniseries, and with numbers like that, I don't think we're going to see a follow-up. I mean, 7,000 copies for anything even remotely mainstream Marvel, I mean, that just floors me. That's insane. But the lowest-selling Marvel book was Marvel Spotlight number 5, which had the Wei Coppel interviews and stuff. It came in at rank 235 with 3,300 copies, which was down 800 copies, which is about 19.5%. Now, even for something that's purely marketing, that's insanely low sales. So I'm not expecting that to continue for the long haul either. Which is too bad, because I kind of like seeing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff in the interviews.
I wouldn't mind the interview so much, but I don't like the price of them. I mean, if they brought them out at like $1.50, you know, $1.99, I think they'd probably have more success. But at $2.99, for what you get, I'd rather pick up either CBG or Wizard, or even listen to a podcast, and you get the same stuff.
Don't you feel this is stuff that could have and should have come out in the Marvel Previews catalog every month?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And like I said, if you're going to bring it out, then bring it out, either, like you said, in the Marvel catalog or at a lower price. Don't make me spend $2.99 on interviews and you know, fluff pieces for your creators.
Yeah, no, I agree. The price is just insane for it, and that's, I'm sure, a lot of what's killing it.
So what's with the Zoom suit? 17,000.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's a great set of opening numbers.
I met John Taddeo out in Philly, and he was actually just walking around with his wife, and he came up to the booth and was curious about what the booth was about. And I started talking to him, telling him, and then he goes, "Oh yeah, I do a book. It's called Zoom Suit." And I said, "You do realize, you know, you have advertising everywhere, and I've seen interviews everywhere for this comic." And he's like, "Oh really?" You know, he seemed very like surprised by that. I was good. And then to see these numbers, I'm like, whoa, he had to know that, you know, that this was selling like this.
Yeah, I was blown away by these numbers. They were much higher than I had expected. But, you know, having read both the first two issues, I'm not surprised. It's well done. It's almost got an early Marvel kind of vibe to it in terms of personality, sales type, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're trying to be friends with the readers and stuff versus, you know, seeing the readers as marks that are just, you know, give us your money sort of thing. Now, also, the first issue had tons of variant covers, so that may have played into it, too. Hmm. But it'll be interesting to see how well that one does in the long haul over the course of the series. It's a mini-series, right? I think it's three issues, four issues?
I'm not sure. What else do you have there?
Let's see. In the Independents, the other thing I wanted to point out was down at rank 239, Stargate SG-1 Raw Reborn prequel, which sold 3,100 copies. Stargate SG-1 is about to start its 10th season and is one of the most successful, you know, sci-fi shows around, certainly these days and whatnot. And the fact that a comic book, you know, spinoff from it is selling, you know, 3,100 copies or whatnot amazes me. The Stargate franchise has shown an ability to be much more popular and widely accepted than that. I don't understand why this one's not selling better.
Didn't that show start off on Showtime?
It started off on Showtime. It did second run syndication, you know, a year behind how it was doing on Showtime. It moved over to the Sci-Fi Channel, and, you know, it's been going strong, you know, for the entire run. So, I mean, it's got a solid following of sci-fi fans, but generally that kind of translates into decent sales comic book-wise. So the fact that it's not, you know, again, surprises me some.
at 277, Black Coat number one from Ape.
Yep, 1,900 copies. Now, what was also very interesting right around that area of the charts was rank 267 with the second printing of Mouse Guard number one, mm-hmm. which did 2,100 copies. And both of those, of course, are Indie Challenge books.
What are you saying there, John? No, I'm kidding.
I'm surprised. I would have thought that Mouse Guard number would have been higher because the buzz on that book now is so phenomenal that...
Well, that's
just
second
the second printing reorders.
No, I know.
Okay.
But I'm just, because it went under the radar with number one, no one bought it. So I would have expected to see closer to like 4,000 to 5,000 for the reorder. Maybe there'll be another reorder because maybe the buzz is happening now, and this was ordered, what, a month or two ago, so...
Yeah, I think you're also talking about an independent book, a odd size independent book, a 350 odd size independent book.
Well, I know all that, but I'm saying the buzz is so huge that
it's still independent. It still has that stigma. I mean, the buzz for issue number one's first printings is amazing. For second printings, you know, I could see, and I know what you're talking about. I think it should be higher too. But there's still that stigma of independent books that people just, you know, won't take the shot.
Maybe we'll see. We have to wait and see what 2 and 3 do.
Well, that's what I want to see. If there are more reorders for either a second printing or a third printing, so maybe there'll be another 2,000 sold next month.
Hey, we also have on 266 Superior Showcase. That was an Indie Challenge too.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I missed that one. Yes, I suppose it was. I can't keep track of all the Indie Challenge stuff. There's too many.
One a month. Four
a month? What the hell are you talking about?
One Indie Challenge a month, four picks a month. You bastards. All right, a few more, and then we need to roll.
Okay, let's go for rank number 75, which is Spawn 155. That came in at 26,700 copies, down 300 or about 1.11%. That was the top-selling Image title for the month, and was the only Image title to be in the top 100. It's also the lowest that title has sold since number 64. And then, of course, from there, Image is, you know, not doing too good. One interesting point of comparison, and I mention this not as any sort of a slam on Image or whatnot, which I think is doing some great stuff, but more to point out how strong the 1 year later reorders were for DC. DC's reorder sales totaled to about a little under 95% of the total number of copies that Image sold this month.
Wow.
So if the 1 year later stuff had been its own little company just for the reorders, it would have came in fifth place.
Hey, let's... can we jump to trades?
We can jump to trades. I don't have a whole lot to say on those.
I'm looking at your Walking Dead numbers here.
Yeah.
This is incredible. Walking Dead Volume 1, the total so far... 34,600 copies of the trade. I mean, that's a huge number. Is that not a big number in the world of trades, John?
I'm blown away by it because virtually every month since any one of the trades came out, that trade has been in the top 100 trades. You know, month in, month out. I think there've been, maybe like a month or two here where Volume 1 didn't show up, or a month or two here where Volume 3 didn't show up. But by and large, every Walking Dead trade that's available shows up in the top 100 every month.
That's a lot of people reading that book.
Well, and continuing to get it. And basically, it seems that on average, potentially every store is ordering a copy of each trade every month, or you know, every other month.
Wow.
And this is another one I wanted to talk to you guys about. I have had the opportunity to read the contents of those, and I do not do horror whatsoever. I am one of the most squeamish people on the planet and was very reluctant to get into it, but I figured, you know, you guys had done a Book of the Month Club on it. I ought to give it a shot. It's going up in sales. I hear great stuff about Kirkman. I like his other work. I read it. I was hooked, and if you guys can find me a run of the original comics for a halfway decent price, please let me know. That's one I'd like to get into.
That's probably an expensive run now, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every time I've seen it on eBay, it's going for, like, you know, 24 issues go for like over $200.
Wow.
And that's a bit beyond my price range, or how much I'm willing to pay for it at least. But Robert Kirkman, if you're listening to this, if you want another reader on your book, just help me out here.
that's like a reverse, right? As somebody who I want the issues to read it, not the trades. That's funny.
Well, I mean, part of it is me being, I don't want to say a conscientious objector or whatnot, but it seems that the industry has gotten to the point where there'll be a good book out there. People will say, no, I'm waiting for the trade. Now, it's gotten worse than that, because now we have people saying, I'd really like to get that trade, but I'm going to wait for the hardcover. Whereas yet, people are saying, I know they're going to come out with a hardcover, but you know what? I'm going to wait for the Absolute Edition. It's a bigger, better hardcover. So, I mean, it's gotten to where there's, many opportunities and ways to encourage a reader not to go buy the story. And I'm not convinced that, the industry is ready to cut over to moving to trades as the original format for content production and distribution, and that they need the monthlies to support that process. I know you mentioned in a recent episode Fentanyl by Drumfish.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the few things I get in trade paperback format, because that's how it's originally released.
Right.
And it's great stuff.
God.
And Peter, I think you should be reading it. I think you'd enjoy it.
John, you read everything, don't you?
No, not everything. I'm only getting about a third or a half of whatever's in the top 300 in a given month or whatnot.
But I read quite a bit. Well, he actually handed me all three trades that are out, so I'm looking forward to digging in on that.
You should. It's got a Teen Titans kind of a vibe to it, but...
Well, actually, since you mentioned that, I did the interview up at Mocha. He said he was very highly influenced by Wolfman's Teen Titans.
Yeah. It's certainly not a ripoff of it by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's new, unique, and original, and one that I would definitely recommend. So read it, enjoy it, and tell us all about it.
Well, John, I think that's all we can do for this month.
Okay.
We appreciate it, all your invaluable calculations, and it's a fascinating look at the world of comics, and it's only going to get fiercer and fiercer as the Civil War kicks in and DC moves away from their events and Marvel jumps into their events, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see some of these independents, see where Mouse Guard goes.
Well, and 52, that's one that's going to be very interesting to watch, and again, where all the one-year-later stuff falls out. I don't think the dust has settled on that, at all.
Cool. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you for your time.
Happy to do it. I enjoyed it.
All right.
And we'll see you next month.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
We need an outro thing for.
Yeah, no. Now we have to go back to the production studio there.
One of those country music ones, I think, is the best one.
Yeah. And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.